Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hello and happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday.
Welcome to the Two Matts regular weekly Q&A session brought to you by the New European newspaper. Matt, first question.
What do you make of Liz Truss telling the CPAC summit in Maryland that she was thwarted by the deep state? Does it matter? Bryn from Edinburgh, bracket student.
I think she's mad. That's what I think.
Well, you're not wrong.
Yeah. And by the way, if she was thwarted by the deep state, well done the deep state. She needs thwarting.
I think the deep state needs more bigging up, possibly merchandise and a little rally in Parliament Square. And you know, what do we want the deep state? When do we want it now? CPAC is the Conservative Political Action Conference, which is the sort of Glastonbury of the right every year. It's a horrific occasion, and it's become more and more MAGA, and it's sort of ultra MAGA this year. It's deep state, anti-globalism, anti-immigration. And if I say that two of the other main speakers are Nigel Farage and Steve Bannon, you'll kind of get the idea about the bill of fare, right? So it's laughable in Liz Truss's case. But the problem is that it's not laughable in a general sense, because this nonsense, this rubbish about the will of the people being thwarted by, it's variously called the administrative state, the deep state. Rishi Sunak calls it the permanent state. I don't think is a reputable thing for a prime minister to say, but he used it in his conference speech. And this is definitely the direction of travel the right is taking around the world, which is to imply that the reason things that they propose don't work are not because they're bloody useless, but because they're being thwarted by officials and people involved in Whitehall in this country, the Beltway, Washington DC in America, and that it's all a plot and it's all a conspiracy. And you know, this runs through Donald Trump, Geert Wilders, Viktor Orban in Hungary, Marine Le Pen in France, and it will become an even more important narrative in the Tory party after the election if they lose. So she is ludicrous, but the idea is troubling and worrying, and actually the point you made is a bloody good one, which is someone needs to actually just deconstruct this nonsense about the deep state. Yeah. There's no such thing.
Yeah, yeah. I occasionally, something in me, some vestige of humanity in my deep heart's core, feels a little bit sorry for Liz Truss, because it must be terrible being out on the edge of humanity desperate. No. And then every time I look at my mortgage statement, I think,
don't yield to that.
All right,
be Bryn. Honest and unmerciful.
Yes, yes, yes. Bryn, thank you very much for your question. Next question, please. One thing you missed regarding Rochdale: Azza Ali had previously done interfaith and anti-extremism work and defended Jewish MP Louise Ellman against anti-Semitic attacks. Another reason he wasn't instantly dumped, and that's from Becca E.T. Thank you, Becca. What do you think? Is that a...
I'm sceptical about this because there was an attempt... We mentioned this on the podcast last week, actually, about how there'd been an attempt to frame the whole by-election as... Azza Ali was removed as the Labour candidate in Rochdale over various anti-Semitic things he'd said.
Yeah.
They waited. Starmer didn't get rid of him immediately. He waited 48 hours. So there was this claim from the left this was because Azza Ali is one of Starmer's gang. But he really isn't. And I think that the real reason that they delayed was that they were terrified of removing a candidate and letting Galloway win because it was too late to change the candidate.
I
honestly do think that's the reason. I've talked to quite a few people about it now.
The only thing I'd add to that is that it's perfectly possible to hold broad anti-Semitic views, but to feel the need to come to defend a Jew in trouble. You know, that's anybody who grew up in the 70s.
People are complicated.
Some of my best friends are black. Was a very common defense against being racist.
Well, you know, it's a famous stereotypical type, and actually we've all met people like this. You know, who have a black neighbor they love.
Yeah,
but rail about immigrants and so it's
it does touch on a point which would be fantastic if we could all just meet more people and share more faiths and just spend more time in each other's company. If there was some magical forum called, I don't know, society, where we sort of got together, met each other, understood each other, that might help.
A book that is brilliant on this is David Lammy's book Tribes.
Oh, right.
And he's sensationally good on actually how to bring people together, because it sounds a bit We Are the World and imagine all the people. But actually Lammy, who is very practical and granular in his approach to these issues, talks about how contact groups between intergenerational and multiracial do exist, and they work.
We should get him on. You know, another thing that I'm increasingly interested in is the idea of citizens' assemblies. We spoke about this.
Yeah, absolutely.
We had a chat yesterday, and I'd been ignorant about the effect that they'd had on various big movements like the abortion
referendum
in Ireland. You know, but the idea that you bring together a broad, demographically representative group of people, you explain to them with expertise what the issue is about, you then let those people talk together and come to a sort of consensus around that issue. You think, my God, if that had happened before the Brexit vote,
it would have been so different.
All right. Becca E.T., thank you so much for your question. Next question, please.
Are legitimate concerns about immigration, in quotes, synonymous with racism, as claimed by James O'Brien in his new book? Would you recommend?
Thank you for Manny.
Oh, sorry, Manny and Spotify. Yeah.
Well, a very timely question, Manny, because we are, as the forthcoming ad break will tell you, giving people a copy of James' superb book, How They Broke Britain. I don't know. I mean, I think there are. Well, let me put it this way. I think probably yes, in most people's minds, when they're talking about concerns about immigration, in a lot of those groups of people, there is a core human kind of instinct towards bigotry in there. But you can't say that there are no concerns about immigration to people, because then you're saying to people what you feel has no value, no valid.
I think, you know, the phrase that James was interrogating and examining is basically one that's used by politicians in order to mask what is actually a bigoted agenda.
Yeah.
I mean, look, every nation state in the world has border control, and it should be a managerial, competently run, and unlike ours, well-resourced, compassionate system. So that's just standard, right? Yeah. So to that extent, every state will have concerns about immigration to the extent that it operates a border policy. I mean, that's not weird or odd or, you know, and it can be and should be more flexible at certain times than others. I mean, you know, but where I agree with the idea is, but what are these concerns? You know, often, okay, so, you know, it's like immigrants are a drain on our public services. No, they're not. Debunked. Mm. You know, that's every study ever done has shown that they're net contributors to the economy. That they take our jobs. No, they don't. They fill them.
Yeah.
You know, and we are, because of Brexit, in huge trouble in the care sector and the NHS and other sectors.
Yeah.
You know, there are huge vacancy problems because of that. The one I think that leads you deepest into trouble is what a lot of people mean when they say they have legitimate concerns about immigration is that immigration is sort of somehow vandalizing a British culture.
Right.
Now, I personally think that's just nonsense. Yeah. Right. But what I think needs to be sort of acknowledged is there's particularly a debate about religion versus secularism in society, which, by the way, is absolutely not confined to Islam. It's all religions, right? But it has often got conflated into an anti-immigration argument. So right. when there's an argument about, you know, a teacher having to go into hiding because of cartoons of Muhammad and all that, this then there's a kind of double illogical leap to shut the borders.
No.
You know, all societies in the modern world are going to be more and more pluralist. We need to negotiate how we deal with that kind of situation. But that's not an argument against immigration.
No.
It's an argument for decent, civilized engagement and pluralism.
But I think what you've just done there is a great example of how you can, through fact, debunk people's fears.
Yes.
And
I wish they had in 2016.
And if people confuse their fears with facts.
Yes.
That's where the problem lies. You know, it's, and also, I think the more of a macro view people take, the better for us all. You know, if people think that when we talk about English culture, what does that mean? You know, that you think about the influence of nations that we've gone out and colonized.
Do you mean Huguenot culture? Do you mean Jewish culture? Do you mean Benjamin Zephaniah?
That great Stuart Lee clip about the beaker
coming over here.
Coming over here, water containing vessels, you know.
Some of my best friends are Jutes.
Exactly. You know, we are a great, wonderful hodgepodge of different cultures.
And you know what? We decided to be one, particularly about 70 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it is absurd in 2024 to say, you know, well, they're not immigrants, they're third generation Britons, you know?
I think the legitimate concern about immigration is that there's not enough of it.
Well, at the moment, we desperately need more immigration. Yeah.
So thank you, Manny, for your question via Spotify. And please do take up that great offer to get a subscription to The New European from just around about £1 a week. And you'll get a free signed copy of James O'Brien's brilliant book, How They Broke Britain. And this is a limited offer. Please get in there while stocks last. Go to theneweuropean.co.uk/2Matts. That's the number 2, M-A-T-T-S. And there's a link in the show notes.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Next question, please. Labour do need to find the money to invest to grow. Non-dom, private schools, COVID corruption will bring in something. Other than taxing wealth, I can't see the move they can make. Any ideas? Denny, any ideas?
Well, I mean, I went back and had a look, and those measures, though, you know, they'll raise some money, won't raise much. So, for example, the schools measure, it will raise about, according to the IFS, Institute for Fiscal Studies, raise about $1.6 billion a year, which is not much.
Yep.
Non-DOMs, it's a necessary reform. Warwick University estimates it will bring in $3.2 billion
a year. Is that all?
Yeah.
Really?
Wow. COVID corruption, yeah. let's claw back the money, but we know that's going to take time, and you know, I don't think it'll add up to enough to, you know, save
they'll
the NHS.
They'll have to sell the yachts first.
They'll have to sell the yachts, and it's going to be locked in courts, and so slow and inadequate. I mean, at the risk of repeating myself, I'm going to repeat myself and say we've got to start looking at wealth taxes.
I'm
very sorry that Labour has ruled it out for now. I hope they rule it back in after the election if they win. We will need growth and lots of it, but that doesn't come about by Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves clicking their ruby slippers. It comes about by investing. And we talked about this, I think, when there was the $28 billion green investment
U-turn.
You know, growth doesn't come about just by wishing for it.
And governments can find the money if they want to. But
yeah.
I'll tell you one thing that still sticks in my craw was the conversation around Rishi Sunak's tax bill when it came out. And the whole... all of the headlines and all of the conversation was Rishi Sunak has paid £500,000 in tax last year, right?
Right.
Not Rishi Sunak has paid 22% in tax last year over his £2.2 million worth of earnings or whatever. And the reason he pays a lower rate of taxation than your average doctor, nurse, school teacher, fireman, copper is that most of his wealth is generated through capital gains.
Right.
And it's taxed at a ridiculously low level.
Why?
Now, well, I kind of hear the arguments about, well, you've got to encourage investment and you've got to, you know, make sure that the people who are creating wealth want to create that wealth here and all of that. So, I get that. But do we really have to have such an iniquitous system where the people who are making shed loads of cash are paying the least amount of tax? It's absolutely stunning.
What you have described is a fiscal system where ownership is privileged over work.
Exactly right. And
right?
Why should that?
And I don't see, I've never understood why that's the case.
Because you examine it, the money where he's getting taxed the least is the money that he's done the least to earn.
Yes.
You know, he's invested money into various corporations, companies, things that have grown, made wealth and have had an exit and suddenly he's been handed his return at X times the amount he invested. But he hasn't done anything. All he's done is put the money in and he's facilitated the growth, but he didn't go down to the coal face and dig the coal out.
And for 40 years plus, we've been told, work hard and you'll be rewarded, right?
Right.
Well, you know, it is intrinsic to wealth that you're not working hard.
That's right.
You're sitting on it. Now, you know, I'm not saying people shouldn't accrue wealth. It's perfect. You know, we live in a capitalist system, which that's a possibility, and people who accrue wealth do indeed contribute to the economy.
Yeah.
But the idea that wealth should be magically insulated from taxation, I think is just ridiculous. And also, just on a practical level, it's unsustainable.
Do you know what? I can't remember where I read it, but somebody said you should ban billionaires, right? And what they meant was that once you get to £1 billion, right, the minute you hit £1 billion in personal wealth, everything you make goes to the state and they name a hospital after you. And that's your reward. But, you know, on the basis that who needs more, who could possibly need more than £1 billion? Everything you make after that should be a system where it is funneled straight into the broader good. And I was like, absolutely, hallelujah. In fact, let's make it much less than £1 billion.
Can you imagine if you said that to Rishi Sunak?
Yeah.
He would pass out.
He would think I was absolutely deranged. But I think if you said to most normal people,
he'd say, Matt, the problem with the economy is that you need billionaires to generate prosperity and aspiration.
Yeah.
Right,
well, the point about being a billionaire is that you've already got to that point.
And yes.
After that, everything can go to the public good.
I think £1 billion is enough.
Yeah. The sad truth is that most people would rather have £2 billion than to have £1 billion and have a hospital named after them. And that is pretty sad, I think.
Yes, I'm not sure most citizens would.
No, I think most citizens.
I think most billionaires, they want £260 billion, like
that's
Elon,
right.
You know.
Like Elon, yeah. All right, thank you, Denny, for that question. Next question, please.
I heard on radio that ultra-processed food make up 60% of our diet in the UK and is now the leading cause of death. Wow. I know the PM wants to stop people smoking, but why doesn't he care as much about stopping people eating this garbage? Good question. Thank you, Alexis in Fife. Matt?
Well, I mean, absolutely right, I think. I think it's extraordinary. We touched, I can't remember which podcast it was, but
we did talk about it recently.
I went off on a rant about the amount of shit in
the rubbish
in supermarkets. And we had some really good positive feedback, including this from Alexis about that topic. And I think it's something we'll cover more deeply in the New European as we go on. But there is a definite issue about the stuff we are putting down people's throats.
Yeah.
And the price, the way that prices are geared towards encouraging people to buy shit that has borderline nutritional value, if any, and discourages them from taking part in something that is a very, I think, a very human thing to do, which is to take raw ingredients and to make food for your family. You know, that's being discouraged as a practice now.
Yes, it is.
You know, and I think there's something, you know, I don't want to come over all Jamie Oliver about this, but there is something tragic about getting young kids hooked on this garbage.
Yeah.
You know, the high fat. There was a guy on the radio, and this is probably where Alexis heard this. I don't know, maybe. But there was a guy, a brilliant guy, who has written a book called Ultra Processed People. Can't remember his name, but we'll find out. We'll come back to him. Yeah. And he was a doctor, and he was talking about, you know, the amount of the lack of good signalling to people about the danger of the food they're buying. And he compared it to tobacco.
Where?
And he said, you know, if you're buying cigarettes, and we're all used to this now, you get a photograph of a cancerous lung on it or something like this. Why can you buy a can of full-fat Coke and it's got three green symbols and then just one red symbol for sugar content?
Right? Yeah.
It's telling you, three quarters of it is good, you know, go for it. It looks like a healthy encouragement. He said there should be massive big warning signs.
This contains
absolute garbage, you know, and it's going to damage your health, because that is a fact. You know?
Absolutely. And I think that we all know that preventive medicine is going to have to be part of a much bigger part. Everyone says this, but then doesn't act upon it.
Yeah.
And there's no better form of preventive medicine than good nutrition.
Yeah.
And maybe exercises, you know, but actually food law is quite weak.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how weak it is. It's really just minimal identification and information on food, whereas, as you say, we need more. I'd be minded to think a bit more radically, actually. I mean, is there a case for subsidizing good food?
Right. Yeah.
You know,
great idea.
Because you know, the problem is, I'll give you an example, which is when I got a bottle of water on my way here, I stopped off at Tesco's, and the woman in front of me, you know, had 6 mega packs of Wotsits in her basket. Jeez. Now, I don't know what she was doing, you know, who knows, right? But it was not a edifying sight. And you just thought, my God, what's that going to do? And I thought, yeah, but you know, they're all on offer. They're cheap. They're easy. Their kids like them because they're moorish and addictive.
Yeah.
And so to actually get from point A to point B across anything other than the foodie metropolitan culture is going to take a radical lowering of price of decent food.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen by magic. It happens by, again, government intervention.
I mean, they've done it to an extent with the sugar tax, haven't they, on fizzy
drinks
and stuff?
They have, but, you know, they've backed down on the 2-for-1 stuff.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So, I mean, this is, I think, a really rich seam of policy debate. People should be talking about how do we get to this outcome.
Yeah, and I think maybe what's happening, because obviously it's complicated and it's nuanced, and I understand that people are on, you know, really tight budgets and they have to feed families, then of course you default to what you can do. But, you know, there is, this is why I was, you know, when there was this huge hue and cry about how could Tesco sell a chicken for £2.50, right? I was very hesitant to feel like, oh, animal welfare must be protected at all and people must pay £8 for a chicken, you know, whatever. I kind of felt, well, if that chicken's feeding a family and that's all they can afford and it's still a bloody chicken and it's nutritional and it's cooked with fresh vegetables or whatever, you can make a good meal.
And not pumped full of chlorine.
And not pumped full of water, chlorine and preservatives and sodium nitrates and all of this crap. Then, yeah, okay, I will park my reservations about animal welfare in that regard. Okay, it's controversial, but that I will.
That's the trade-off.
There's the trade-off. And I would soon, but if your solution would be to say, well, let's have the government pay for increased animal welfare, but keep the price affordable for everybody, then fantastic.
And I think, you know, Jack Monroe, the wonderful bootstrap cook.
Yeah.
You know, their kind of way of doing things and showing how you can eat very, very healthily for next to nothing was magical.
I haven't heard so much about Jack lately.
No.
She got a ton load of shit from a load of cranks, didn't she, off Twitter and stuff.
They've kind of maintained a low profile.
Yeah, that's a great shame.
But wherever you are, Jack, come on back.
Come back.
We need
back,
you.
Come back, Jack. We need you. And thank you, Alexis, for your question. And Alexis, that was actually the last question.
Last question,
so thank you very
so
much indeed. Please get your questions and any feedback into tomats@tnepublishing.com. We really do appreciate you taking the time to write to us and tell us what you think. We read everything. If we don't respond to everything, it's only because we're creating brilliant independent journalism for the new European.
News never sleeps.
Never sleeps. And a reminder that you can take up your great offer to get James O'Brien's brilliant book, How They Broke Britain, when you take out a subscription to The New European at theneweuropean.co.uk/2mats. And until our regular show on
Friday.
Happy
Sunday.
Happy Sunday. Have a great one.
Have a good one.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.